Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, Badgers football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, and I am again solo today. Had a little trouble getting a guest, but we're getting gearing up for the 4th of July. I know everybody's busy this week, so it's just going to be me today, a little bit shorter of a podcast, but got some good stuff for you for the podcast anyway. All right, so a little bit of a slow news week. Didn't have a ton of recruiting news going on. I think things are slowing down a little bit after that big July push. Saw the Badgers land, you know, a couple of four-star recruits and do a really good job in that sense. But a little bit slower news-wise outside of that, but still got a good show for you today. We're going to talk about what an all Big Ten schedule could look like because, you know, with everything up in the air right now because of coronavirus, all that type of stuff, there's still potential out there for a major adjustment to the college football season. And one of the ideas out there is just playing your conference teams. And just kind of want to give an idea of what an all-Big Ten schedule would look like for the Badgers. And also going to talk about the Big Ten Network's all-decade team that's being released each day throughout this week. Saw some interesting picks, some questionable picks here and there. Going to talk about a couple of those. And then want to talk about the season as a whole. You know, I mentioned, you know, still possibilities for major challenges or major changes to the football season. I mean, there's still a question if we're going to have a football season because of the recent spikes we're seeing across the country in COVID-19 cases and infection. Just going to talk about that and what you know, we as fans can do to, you know, at least do our part. Wisconsin as a whole was doing better. We're starting to dip back down a little bit. Where we saw Dane County, I'm recording this Wednesday morning, saw Dane County today have to put some stricter rules on gatherings and some other things. So we were doing better. Now we're starting to dip down a little bit again. So talk about just what we can do to try to help and hopefully get a football season off in the fall. But before I get into all that stuff, I want to talk about something that's, you know, important to the newsroom here at the Wisconsin State Journal, and that is that Tom Oates is retiring. You may have seen his farewell column in the weekend edition of the Wisconsin State Journal, or you might have seen it online. He announced that he retired, and his last day was actually yesterday. It's July 1st, I'm recording this, so his last day was yesterday. You know, on the personal side, if you've been following along, you know that I came in, joined the team back in September of last year. And I knew Tom Oates from working in lacrosse, and we ran his columns pretty much every time he wrote one. And, you know, just got to know him reading his work and saw him in a couple of basketball tournaments, didn't talk to him or anything. But, you know, the second that I joined the staff, though, he was immediately incredibly supportive. He and Jim Polzin were, and, you know, he would check in with me pretty much every time I saw him about how things were going, if I needed, you know, X, Y, or Z. He was super supportive in that way. And, you know, when you're a guy like me coming in cold, jumping in into the middle of a season, you know, there are already two games in by the time I joined the staff, it's hard to quantify how much it helps having not only somebody in your office that's supportive like that, but then somebody like Oatsy, who's a veteran, had been around and, you know, knew all the players, knew all the people that you needed to know and needed to introduce yourself to around these programs here at UW. So having a guy like that help you out is immeasurable how important that is. And if you go and look at his Twitter, the responses that he got from around the country, Tom was that way with a lot of people. You know, he was always somebody that was gonna, you know, reach out to the new guy or the new girl in the press boxes and make sure that they were comfortable. And that's a, you know, he's got a ton of awards and a ton of other things that are what you would kind of define as a legacy. But you look at some of the responses and the impact that he had on other people in this profession's career paths. That's quite a legacy to leave as well. It was cool getting to know him over road trips and over dinners and such. It was insane to see the memory that he had for different people and places and sports events and all that type of stuff. And the fun part about working with them was that, you know, as the beat reporter, you're really kind of focused in on the game itself and kind of the play-by-play and, okay, X happened, so then now Z is happening. Why? You know, kind of finding those connections. And Tom always had a really good way of looking at the bigger picture. You know, the way that he would approach his columns, and we would always talk about them, was like, you know, all right, X, Y, and Z happened, but what does it actually mean? So he had a really good handle on the columnist's role in the overall coverage of a game and of a season. And it was just cool to get to learn from a guy like that and kind of see how he approached his work. And I want people to understand, for the last, I think it's 20-some-odd years, maybe a little bit shorter, but about 20 years, OT has gone to basically every Badger football and Packer football game in the last 20 years. And I know that sounds awesome, and a lot of fans probably want to do that around the state, but you got to understand that the amount of travel that took and the amount of time away from home and, you know, family and other commitments throughout the fall and winter and things like that. And then also, you know, it wasn't like he just got to go and watch the game and have fun, have a beer, hang out. You know, he's got to work and he's got to produce a column. And as you saw throughout his career, able to produce a ton of good columns out of those games. It was really impressive what he did for a really long time here at the State Journal. Was inspired to by his work and inspired, you know, getting to know him, being around him, to work like he did. So definitely made me better, even the 1 year I got to work with him. So thanks a lot, Tom Oates, and I know our readers are going to miss having your perspective and your columns in our coverage. But with that said, we'll move on to some of the things we talked about off the top here. And I want to start with this all Big Ten schedule idea. It's something that's been floating around, and it's something that I've even kind of pitched on this show, you know, the possibility of eliminating some of these play-in games, or not play-in, but pay-to-play games and some of the smaller schools that a lot of teams around the country are scheduling. Now, this year, the Badgers are a little bit different because they're playing Notre Dame in a non-conference. They're playing Appalachian State. That's, you know, not a slouch. I mean, it's a small name and small school, but they're a top 25 team most of the season last year. And then their one, you know, game that you would consider that it would be Southern Illinois early on in the year. But this idea kind of goes back to all the issues surrounding college football right now, you know, not trying to promote travel and have issues and hold games that are going to make it harder to prevent the spread of COVID-19. And I think that the basis of this idea is that if you're going to have games that present a risk, right? We've talked so much about risk management on this show and in college football lately, just how you prevent or how do you manage this risk and how do you kind of, you know, mitigate any risk that you can. But any game that you hold is going to have risks attached to it, you know. So if you're going to take those risks, make the games as worth it and as meaningful as possible. And in college football, there's really, until you get to the postseason, there's no more meaningful games than your conference games. So I think that's kind of the kernel where this idea comes from, is that if you're going to take these risks, don't have quote-unquote meaningless games, or don't have games that are clearly one side's just significantly favored, or, you know, one side just doesn't have a chance. So I do think that idea is solid. I think you're going to have these games, make them as meaningful and as important to the game and to the national picture of college football as possible. And I've got a couple other thoughts on the positives and kind of the ways that this could work or why it would work. However, I want to start with some of the obvious downsides. I think that you're already going to have these risks of COVID and everything else that's going on. But you start adding more conference games and decreasing some of the games that might be lopsided, that you can get more guys into a game. I just think that there's a significantly higher risk of injury in adding conference games. Scott Frost, the Nebraska head coach, was talking the other day to the media, and he said, if you polled Big Ten coaches, you'd get zero support for that idea, particularly if it's not what the rest of the major college conferences are doing. Now, that makes sense. I mean, I don't think any Big Ten coach is going to say, yeah, sign me up for more Big Ten games, because they know how tough they are, how much of a grind they are. I mean, you look at – just think about Wisconsin last season. Even a game against Purdue where Wisconsin ended up winning pretty handily, there was struggle. It was a tight game. It was more physical than their earlier games against, you know, Central Michigan or maybe South Florida. I just think that any Big Ten coach or any Big Ten player is going to be like, okay, more conference games that are going to be tougher where guys are, you know, equally matched or maybe even better than I am. No thanks. But I sympathize with that aspect, and I try to empathize with the idea of these guys are already taking a risk. Let's not try to make it even tougher on them. But here are some of the reasons I think that an all Big Ten schedule might be able to – or might be the way to go and might be more successful than just a regular season. First thing, and probably the most important, is that I'm of the belief that if we're able to get a college football season in, I don't think they're going to have fans. I just think there's so many logistical issues there and so many – you know, problems that present themselves, especially when you look at where a lot of these stadiums rest in their cities. The idea of congesting a lot of people into these areas to get them in and out of a game to watch the college football game, I just don't see happening. And I just don't see a lot of local governments being able to kind of reconcile that with themselves when you're considering this virus and what we know about social distancing and how it can help. I do think, though, because you're not going to have fans in the stands, your number one job if you're putting on games is to make them the best television product possible to try to make up some of that revenue, right? So they're going to have to restructure some of these deals with the Big Ten Network and ESPN, the other broadcasters that they have here in the Big Ten, Fox, and you're going to have to make sure that a little bit more of the money that's going to or that's coming in because these games are going to get a higher rating is coming back to the schools to try to make up some of that revenue. So if that's your if we agree on that premise that, you know, the television rating and being able to draw more eyeballs is more important because of the revenue aspect, wouldn't you want to put on the best games possible? You know, think about some of those early season games. Like, let's keep the focus on Wisconsin. Think about that Central Michigan game last season. How many people outside of hardcore Badger fans and hardcore Chippewa fans watched that game? You know, it's maybe in the thousands, you know, very small number, right? But let's say you replace that game with the Badgers playing Ohio State or Penn State or maybe Michigan State. That's going to get more people watching than any other, you know, non-conference game they could do. So, and I don't think you're even, if you consider Ohio State or Penn State, you're going to get people watching that because it's a marquee matchup. You know, it's a top 25, maybe even top 15. We'll see how everything shakes out in the polls later on this fall. You know, that's a top 25, top 15 type of matchup. That's going to get people watching that are, you know, passively interested in the Big Ten but just want to watch, you know, two really good football teams play a game. You know, so if we are agreeing that getting people to watch games on TV is going to be more important, the idea of playing conference games to draw more eyeballs, it makes a lot of sense. And if you're trying to make the biggest spectacle you can, obviously in the Big Ten, your biggest games are Ohio State and Michigan. You know, Ohio State and Penn State, because they've been so successful and they're top 10 programs right now. And then past that, it's probably Wisconsin, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Penn State, Wisconsin, and Michigan, because this west side of the bracket or west side of the conference doesn't have that same pedigree and that same consistency of being a good team. Obviously, Minnesota jumped up last year. Iowa's always pretty solid, but they don't bring that same marquee draw that Wisconsin's been able to start doing in the last few years where they've been so successful in that top 15 range. those are the biggest games you can make. And if you need to draw eyeballs, those are the games you need to schedule. So I just think if you're going to limit fans or, you know, eliminate fans altogether, like I think that's going to happen, making these games as big of a spectacle as you can is going to be the most important thing. And there's no bigger spectacle than some of your biggest games that you can make in the conference. A couple of other thoughts on this. If this were to happen, I think you'd have to ignore divisions. I think you'd have to just say you obviously are respecting the divisions in the sense that those are the crossover games that you need to schedule to replace non-conference games. But you just don't have the standings in the divisions themselves, I don't think. I think you would just say, you know, the top two records in the Big Ten go to the Big Ten championship game this season because of the schedule changes we had to make. And then I think what you have to do is reset the rotation of crossover games, because you throw this Penn State, Ohio State, or Penn State, Wisconsin game into this season, let's say. You don't need them playing, you know, next season or in two seasons. So you have to reset some of those rotations of how these games get scheduled in the future. But I do think that there's a feasible way to make this happen, even though it would be tougher on the players and the coaches. Honestly, I had this whole long, you know, thought there. I understand that there's probably very little chance this is going to happen because of all of the problems and the issues that come up with it. But I do think it's fun to think about, and I do think that if it kind of gets to crunch time here, you're going to be staring down a possibility of needing to make this happen because, you know, so far the Big Ten schools, I think, are leading the way, if not, you know, among the best in the lowest amounts of cases of COVID and the you know, least spread within the teams. So, so far at least, maybe just playing Big Ten teams might be the safest option. But we'll see on all of that as we get a little bit closer to when the season starts. All right, I want to switch gears here and talk about this Big Ten Network All-Decade team that's been rolling out this week. So far, the Badgers have Jonathan Taylor at running back, Chris Borland at linebacker, and Michael Dieter at guard on the team. Tight ends and defensive backs are being released today on Wednesday. Wide receivers and defensive linemen will be released on Thursday. Quarterback, kicker, punter, all-purpose, and coach are going to be released on Friday. Back to the Badgers here. I think it's fun when you have an all-decade team like this and some of these, you know, look-backs, because you get to kind of stop and talk about some of the great performances and some of the great careers that we've been able to see in the last few years here in the Big Ten. And obviously, you know, Taylor, we just got to see him and just got to kind of appreciate in the last few games the career that he put together at Wisconsin and the remarkable consistency that he brought every game. You know, a guy that was a 200-yard game, was a walking 200-yard game pretty much any time UW needed it. It was, you know, really cool to see. But I thought getting a chance to stop and think about what Chris Borland did here at UW. Obviously, you know, Borland's been in the news in the last few years, not anti-football, but just kind of talking about the risks and the dangers that football can present if you don't, you know, do everything you can to prevent them. But you go back and look at the way this guy played and what he could do for a Badger defense that, you know, had its ups and downs in those years, but he was just so consistent and so good at reading offensive lines, reading blocks, reading, you know, where ball carriers were thinking about going. You watch the highlight tapes that the Big Ten Network put up, and he's in the cutback lane every time, or he's, you know, pursuing and stopping plays before they can really develop. A guy like that, and the way that he attacked tackles, you know, he wasn't just a wrap up and bring you down, let you get a couple extra yards. He brought the wood, and he made sure that when he made contact, guys were going straight down. It was fun to watch him. I think when you get into any type of these lists and these all first, you know, we talk about every year with all Big Ten and different type of things, you get any type of list, you're going to have some snubs. And I think one area where Wisconsin didn't quite get the recognition it probably deserved was on the offensive line. I mentioned Michael Dieter got on the list as a guard, played 54 games, a program record, and second all time in the Big Ten. You have a situation where there's so many good offensive linemen here in the Big Ten. You know, some of the other guys that made it were like Billy Price from Ohio State and Wyatt Davis right now, who plays for Ohio State right now. That one surprised me a little bit that they would have picked an active guy who I'm not sure if he was more deserving than some of the other options out there. But Taylor Wan from Michigan, some other guys like that. I was just surprised that a guy like, you know, maybe Travis Frederick from Wisconsin or Tyler Biadasz, maybe Ryan Ramczyk, some of these guys that had these stellar college careers, obviously Ramczyk a little bit shorter, but didn't get on the list and I don't think made the second team either. I think it was just Gabe Karimi Kevin Zietler, that was the other one, got on the second team for Wisconsin. I think Biadasz might be the biggest snub only because of his longevity and the amount of games that he played. I'll listen to any debate about any of those guys from that 2018 senior class of offensive line that I think probably deserve some more recognition on this list as well. Another, you know, kind of debate was, you know, which Wisconsin running back was going to get on there. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor did, and there was a case to be made for Melvin Gordon as well. I think maybe that second Doak Walker award for Jonathan Taylor maybe pushed him over the top. And, you know, the accumulation of numbers favor Taylor because, you know, he was a real full-time starter for three seasons, whereas Gordon only had those 2 years where he was a real starter and split time a little bit more. But I think it's just fun when you have these things going on around the world where sports are kind of shut down and we are in these summer times where we're looking for sports content to consume, and we got this, and we got to debate this, and saw some fun Twitter conversations yesterday about offensive linemen and who was better and who should have been ranked above. So that's always cool. When we get to Friday, I think one interesting thing to look at is the all-decade coach for the Big Ten. I don't think there's really any debate that it's going to be Urban Meyer. I mean, in 7 years, he went 83-9 and won a national championship at Ohio State. And also, he's on the voting committee, so that's probably not going to hurt his chances either. But I do think that Paul Christ is the clear second choice. I'm not sure if they're going to do a second team coach or a number two coach, but I think Paul Christ is a clear choice there, obviously because he's been in the conference for 5 years and there hasn't been as much stability at some of the other programs. But you look at the 5 years that Christ has been at UW, you're talking 52-16, four straight bowl wins, most wins in the conference in that span that Chris has been at UW. I just think that, you know, you're probably going to go with Urban Meyer just because of the 7 year run that he put together in the 2010s. But Chris is right there when you're talking about number two and, you know, arguably the best coach in the conference that's not Urban Meyer of the 2010s. As we start wrapping up the show here, one last segment for you. I want to talk about, you know, the challenges and the difficulties facing college football and having a season in the next few months here. You know, I'm recording this on July 1st, so we're a little bit more than 2 weeks away from when training camp is supposed to start. And you look around the country and the way that COVID-19 cases are spiking and some of the things that we're seeing, I know there are different theories about why some of these things are happening between, you know, tests being recorded now or that have been backed up or, you know, increased testing because of the capabilities and things of that nature. I don't think that there's any argument, though, that we're still in the middle of this pandemic. I don't think that I don't think there's any argument that we are on the downside of it or that we are close to fixing or getting rid of this virus right now. So I should start off by saying I have no medical degree And, you know, as I've said before, I've got a vested interest in this college football season happening. So make sure you keep all of that in your mind as I talk here. But I do think that we are in a situation where college football decision makers are starting to look at, okay, we've been able to kick the can down the road a little bit and see, you know, have that wait and see approach. All right, well, they've waited about as long as they can because, like I mentioned, you got 2.5 weeks before you've got players coming in from all around the country reporting to mandatory training camp and are going to be on their campuses for, you know, basically 5 months after that. So I think that we are as close to decision time and as close to, you know, colleges having to make their own decisions about what's going to happen. You know, you've already seen smaller schools. I know that some of them are at the Division III level have already canceled their fall seasons. Major programs like Michigan have said that they're going to have a big budget deficit because they're already anticipating no fans. And, you know, when a program like that has to operate at a deficit, when a football program doesn't bring in the revenue they expected and the athletic department has to run at a deficit, you know, the decisions that get made there are going to be, you know, life-altering, not only for potentially athletes or maybe coaches, you know, some other ways that, you know, things are going to have to change because that money has to be made up somewhere. I just think that there's a few things that, you know, the average person, the average fan that wants college football to happen, you know, can do. And I think number one is, you know, stay at home as much as you can. I know it stinks. I'm getting stir crazy here and there, but, you know, do everything you can to stay at home and, you know, try to help out the people that have to be out, that's work has to, you know, be quote unquote on the front line, or, you know, the people that are doing what they can to keep life somewhat normal for you. So try to stay home as much as you can. And then number two, when you have to go out, wear a mask. You know, it's been really frustrating to see how that's become like a political argument. Like, you know, one side saying this, one side saying that. And, you know, it's just, it happens all the time in pretty much every walk of, or everything that becomes a national story. There's one side saying one way and one side saying the other. It's annoying to see that people are turning what's supposed to be something that helps keep you safe into a, you know, this is not something that I agree with. It's like, to me, when I see the arguments against masks, it's like, you know, kind of like the argument against a seatbelt, where it's like, all right, yeah, I understand that you maybe don't always want to, or maybe sometimes you forget, but generally having a rule for a seatbelt's a good thing for yourself and everybody involved. And that's kind of where I feel like we're at with the mask debate and the mask conversation, where it's like, it's really tough to start presenting arguments on the other side where this is clearly a thing that's going to help keep yourself and others safe if we have better participation in wearing masks. And, you know, if for no other reason than you want college football to happen or you want the NFL to happen, you wear a mask, that's fine. Whatever your reason is, even if it's selfish and you just want football, that's fine. You know, it doesn't really matter as long as you're wearing a mask and doing what you can when you're out and about to help keep people safe and, you know, start slowing this spread down again. You know, the thing is that every school wants football. You know, we're going to see schools try their darndest here to have this season because they need it. You know, we've talked about the financial ramifications in the last few shows and talked about, you know, how important football is to college athletics economy. You know, every school, every program is going to try to have football if it's possible. But right now, with the way things are going, I'm getting less confident that it's going to be possible. So, you know, if people that want college football can band together and start doing some things on their smaller level, kind of grow it like that to maybe help things out, you know, that's going to be a good thing. It's just, we have to it's going to be harder for college decision makers to look at the numbers in front of them and see where things have been going the last 7-14 days and say, yeah, we're going to play college football, no problem, unless those numbers start to go down a little bit again. So that's my two cents. Like I mentioned, no medical degree, not an expert in anything other than, you know, attempting to watch football and contextualize it and present it to you. So that's my two cents, but just do what you can. And if, like I mentioned, if it's literally just that you want football to happen, that you wear a mask, that's fine. Do your part. All right, that's going to do it for the show this week. Like I mentioned, a little bit slower on the news end, so a couple of just opinion thoughts there. Thank you guys very much for downloading the show. It's been really cool to see how consistent it's been in the last few months, where there hasn't been as, you know, much news, and obviously all this COVID stuff's been shutting everything down. But it's been cool to see just how many of you are still interacting and downloading the show and listening and things like that. Please share it with your friends or anybody that you think would be interested in Badger Talk. And hopefully in a couple of weeks, we're talking about position battles and training camp and things like that, where it's actual football as opposed to, you know, some of this virus talk that we've had the last few shows. But we will be back next week, hopefully with a guest. I'll keep working on that. But until then, thank you very much for listening.